From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Outgoing Defense Secretary James Mattis was replaced at the beginning of this year by his Deputy Defense Secretary, Patrick Shanahan. Shanahan, until as recently as 2017, was a high-level executive at Boeing Corporation, one of the leading weapons manufacturers in the U.S. In fact, he worked at Boeing for 30 years. Now, there's always been a bit of a revolving door between arms manufacturers and the U.S. government. But under President Donald Trump, has that revolving door been spinning out of control? My guest is Mandy Smithberger, director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Project on Government Oversight. Welcome to the program, Mandy.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you recently co-wrote a piece with William Hartung for Tom Dispatch called Our Man from Boeing Has the Arms Industry Captured Trump's Pentagon. Let's talk about who Patrick Shanahan is. He was no one sort of paid much attention to him while he was a deputy defense secretary. He's now acting defense secretary, and he has had a career at a weapons manufacturing company, but others in his position have before, haven't they?
They have. So President Obama's first deputy secretary of defense, William Lynn, was a Raytheon lobbyist. And we've seen a number of other instances where the deputy secretary was from the defense industry. But what's unique here is that Patrick Shanahan is the acting defense secretary. And not only does he have an extensive career at Boeing, but he really has no experience in public service.
So he served at Boeing for 30 years, which is a very, very long career. Presumably it's the longest job he's ever had because he's not that old. And he has, as far as we know, maybe 1 year's worth of experience in government?
Correct. And one of the concerns is that because of his long experience at Boeing, that he would be biased in favor of his old employer and be biased against other defense contractors.
Right. Now we're hearing that he might have taken a decision around Lockheed Martin, which is one of Boeing's main competitors, but he has denied that. Now, there are rules, aren't there, in place to protect government from people abusing their positions or letting their former positions dictate or influence their current positions? Is he recusing himself from decisions that involve giving Boeing business?
Yes. Acting Secretary Shanahan has pledged to recuse himself from all decisions regarding his former employer, Boeing. What we are concerned about, though, is that there might be some things that are come under his purview that will impact his employer, but where Boeing might not be a specific party, and as a result, that he will not be recused from those decisions.
How unique is he? How much has the Pentagon been infiltrated by people who at one point or another worked for a weapons manufacturer that contracts with the government on selling them arms?
So the revolving door between the arms industry and the Department of Defense is a systemic problem that has occurred for a long time. It's what President Eisenhower raised concerns about in the military-industrial complex. And what our concern is that you have a confusion about what's in the best interest in the arms industry and what's in the best national security interest of the United States being conflated when you have a revolving door this prolific.
So we know when Trump came into office, he came in with this, bigger is better approach to the military. He has been, he's gotten excited about weapons that are deadly. He is someone who has, and one sort of feels that that's, it's easy to see how that would be consistent with his approach in other arenas. So how much has he championed just simply arms purchases in the first 2 years of his tenure?
So President Trump is built on a legacy, actually, of President Obama of really pushing for more foreign military sales. But really, the president has brought it to a whole new level. He has the State Department supporting efforts to promote arms sales. You've had him talking about how our alliances should be based on the ability for those arms sales to generate jobs in the United States. So again, we see really defense contractor interests being put ahead of the interests of human rights and the American people's national security interests.
What sort of a defense secretary does Patrick Shanahan claim to be, as far as you know? What is his vision for the Defense Department? And is it clear that he may be nominated to actually lead the Defense Department to replace permanently James Mattis?
It's not clear whether he will be nominated to actually replace Secretary Mattis, though the president has said a number of positive things about Shanahan. And in particular, I think the president values his business experience. From some of the rhetoric that we've heard, it sounds like he is inclined to inflate threats and to in such a way that we think it's going to really be beneficial to his former employer, Boeing. We had some hopes that maybe he would use his business acumen to be able to increase accountability at the department, but we have yet to see that occur.
Now, in the piece that you co-wrote with William Hartung, you gave some examples of the kind of rampant conflict of interest that Shanahan seems to already have stepped into. Can you give us some of those examples around, for example, the Boeing F-15X project?
Absolutely. So in the case of the F-15X program, we actually learned that it was something the Air Force was opposed to, but according to press reporting, they felt pressured by Acting Secretary Shanahan to request additional funds for that program. We also have concerns, given his past experience working on missile defense programs for Boeing, that is another area that he will be a booster and that will be significantly more profitable for Boeing.
So he seems to think, like Trump, that the more weapons the U.S. government buys, the better. This at the same time, of course, that the federal government is struggling with revenues because billionaires got massive tax breaks. And this is taxpayer money going towards buying these weapons, right?
Absolutely. It's a lot of taxpayer dollars that some people would like to see spent on other priorities. And in particular, we're concerned that some of these weapon systems are wasteful, they're ineffective, that they're spending a lot of money on technology that's not reliable, so they're really not making us safer.
Now, we mentioned that there have been people working in the weapons industry that have been part of government. You mentioned Obama. There was a long line of presidents that have put arms makers in government. What has traditionally been the result once these, they're mostly men, leave office? Do they return back? Does the revolving door take them back into the weapons industry? Presumably, they had careers in this private industry, came into government, made decisions that benefited their old jobs, and then went back to those old jobs with the you know, sort of benefiting from the actions they took in government.
Right. In a number of cases, we do see these people go right back to the defense industry. And what concerns us is it makes it look like there's a kind of quid pro quo agreement about their actions in the department and the decisions that are being made there that are profitable to those companies. And it gives the appearance that they're being rewarded for those actions in a way that is not fair.
Now, how much experience does Shanahan have on the kind of, you know, Department of Defense leadership positions that one really wants to see? Because if one is motivated first and foremost by weapon sales rather than motivated by national security or defending the nation, which is all the Defense Department is supposed to be about, we're in trouble. You write in your article that he seems obsessed by China.
Absolutely. So he does not have one of the concerns raised by former Chairman John McCain of the Armed Services Committee was that Mr. Shanahan really had no experience when it came to foreign policy. And as a consequence, it's not clear how he can guide the department to make the best decisions in that area. It makes him much more dependent on the people around him. And as we also detail in the article, a lot of the other people around him are people who come from the arms industry. You don't see a lot of people with significant foreign policy experience to inform these decisions.
Right. I mean, if you have experience in the Department of Defense, in government, you have a better sense of what works, for example, in a theater of war and what doesn't, as opposed to someone who's used to selling arms and for whom the more weapons we buy and deploy, the better it is. What about nuclear policy? Where does he stand on the issue of nuclear weapons? Again, we know Trump is extremely hawkish on nuclear weapons. He once sort of famously said, and I'm paraphrasing here, why do we have them if we're not using them, wants to expand the U.S.'s nuclear arsenal?
So everything we see to date appears that he is also supportive of the modernization plans of both President Obama and President Trump to increase the number of nuclear weapons. As far as his policies for as far as use, those are issues that I think Congress still needs to ask more questions about.
So it's not clear necessarily whether he has a specific interest in purchasing more nuclear weapons. And actually, I don't even know if Boeing is in the business of manufacturing nuclear weapons, is it?
I believe it is. That's a little bit outside of my area of expertise.
So what about the fact that you have this person who's in government, who's leading presumably career Defense Department folks? Do you know if there's a tension within the Department of Defense from people who have spent their careers at the DoD and who don't like to see this kind of revolving door? As far as you know, is this just like how Trump has put in place inexperienced industry men into positions of government power? Will we see problems at the DoD?
So I would actually say in this case, because of how prolific the revolving door has been between Department of Defense officials and the arms industry, that it is not as unique. And my sense is that civilians there are not as concerned as one might see them be at the EPA or at the State Department or in the Interior Department.
What about Congress? Is there any congressional oversight?
There's been some congressional oversight. During his confirmation hearing, Senator Warren and Senator McCain all raised concerns about him coming from the arms industry, wanting to make sure that there would be proper recusals in place. Senator Blumenthal asked for him to make any waivers of those recusals public. To date, we have not seen any of those occur, but we need more oversight to determine how those policies are being enforced.
So the U.S. government is, of course, purchasing weapons from companies like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and Boeing, but these U.S.-based companies also sell weapons to other countries, which is a big part of their business. As far as you can tell, does Patrick Shanahan, who worked, let's remind ourselves, at Boeing for 30 years and is now the acting Department of Defense head, does he have any, has he taken any positions that would suggest he would like, for example, for Saudi Arabia to buy more weapons from Boeing and other U.S. weapons manufacturers?
We have not seen any evidence of that today, but that is certainly something that we are going to be watching. We want to make sure that arms sales are based on what actually helps us. We want to make sure that we are not party to additional human rights abuses.
Is there an ongoing contract between the U.S. government and Shanahan's former employer, Boeing?
Oh, there are numerous contracts. Boeing is the second largest defense contractor for the Department of Defense.
After Lockheed Martin?
Correct.
Right. Does Lockheed Martin have its people in the DoD as well?
Yes, Lockheed Martin is represented as well. The Undersecretary of Policy, for example, is a former Lockheed Martin executive.
So where do we go from here? We live in a time when there isn't much attention, unfortunately, among the American public for the work that the Department of Defense is doing, the wars that we're fighting, the weapons that we're buying. Do you fear that this issue of this revolving door has remained invisible in the media?
I have some concerns that there isn't enough attention on this issue, but I see some hope in the House of Representatives that H.R. 1 includes a number of provisions that are the kinds of ethics reforms we need to see to make sure that you don't have continued self-dealing occurring. And putting those kinds of laws and restrictions into place is a great first step. And then making sure that there's oversight and enforcement is essential.
Right. So H.R. 1 is that anti-corruption bill, this massive multi-part anti-corruption bill that Democrats had promised to introduce in the House. So because it addresses conflicts of interest, it would also tackle the potential conflicts of interest and the revolving door at the DOD.
Exactly.
And what can ordinary Americans do? I mean, are you calling on people to contact their congressional representatives to pressure them to have better oversight and to kind of end this sort of revolving door?
We are. So we actually have a petition on our website, pogo.org, calling for people to ask for reforms of the revolving door. We are certainly doing what we can to make sure the key provisions of H.R. 1 are incorporated into law. We would like to see these revolving door cases all be made available to the public as well.
Isn't the U.S. swimming in weapons? I mean, this is another thing that's just rarely talked about. There's always money for weapons. There's always money for war. There's never enough money for Medicare for All, which we just recently discussed on our program, right? There's, whenever you talk about healthcare as a right for everybody, the question is always raised, where's the money going to come from? When it comes to talking about paying teachers, where's the money going to come from? But when it comes to buying weapons from Boeing or Lockheed Martin, there's always money available. And these aren't necessarily weapons that get used. They, you know, it's a seems like a giant taxpayer dollar sinkhole.
Yeah, we are very concerned that a lot of the practices are really just crony capitalism that help defense contractors and don't make us any safer. I think that's another area where it's really important for the public to be engaged on budget discussions, on decisions about how to spend money, because unfortunately our budget is really how we show what our priorities are as a country.
The issue of the weapons industry has often been linked with jobs, which is just quite bizarre to me because we don't have that same standard applied to, say, education or healthcare or a Green New Deal, as people are now calling for. Is that still something that you hear, say, under the Trump administration that, well, we can't, you know, we've got to keep weapons sales up because jobs?
Absolutely. So we have literally seen the president say that on multiple occasions, that we have to support additional arms sales to support jobs. It's important for the public to understand, though, that defense spending is actually a really poor job creator, and that money, if you really want to create more jobs, it's you create more jobs by spending it in other sectors, not in defense.
And so it seems as though the speaking about jobs when it comes to the defense industry is code for the profits of the defense industry. How profitable is the industry?
Oh, it's very profitable. If you can see that some of the executives for these companies are some of the top compensated of anyone in the nation. You see that even as the defense budget goes up, in some cases they are cutting jobs anyway. So there's plenty of money to be made at the top, and it's not clear that that's really something that's benefiting the whole country.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Mandy. We'll post a link to your article from our website. This is a piece, Our Man from Boeing Has the Arms Industry Captured Trump's Pentagon, co-written with William Hartung, and is pogo.org the best website to find out about the work you do?
It is, and I hope people will explore our revolving door database as well.
And that's pogo.org. It stands for the Project on Government Oversight. Thank you so much, Mandy, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Mandy Smithberger, director of the Strauss Military Reform Project of the Project on Government Oversight. And we've been discussing the revolving door between the Pentagon and arms manufacturers under Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.